We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Another Friday edition of College Sports Now. Perfect way to end a short work week, unless, of course, you're for Hoopstats' Megan Gowert, in which you had to work this past Monday. Loaded show coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll be joined by Marissa Ingemi of the San Francisco Chronicle. We'll talk a little Stanford. We'll talk Pac-12 hoops. Cardinal had a heck of a test yesterday in Boulder in double overtime. Have another one coming up Saturday in Salt Lake City against apparently one of the four best teams in the country in Utah. Conference races coming down to the wire. Loaded weekend slate across the country with multiple top 10 matchups on for most what is the final weekend of the regular season. And oh yeah, last night the final top 16 reveal announced by the selection committee, movement from a few weeks ago. But Megan, you traded the cold of the Northeast for a what was an attempt at a little California sunshine. Give me the lowdown. You said it's raining, but what's on the schedule? Apparently no beach trip. What you got going?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule is a little bit up in the air right now. We're still trying to figure out what to do with this weather. So to be determined still.
But you made your way out to Pauly last night. You said it's not your first trip there. So what were your experiences there?
It's not my first trip there, but it was my first trip to cover a game. So that was exciting. UCLA did not get the win, but an ugly matchup, not unlike the Stanford Colorado game yesterday in terms of the offense, but a good game, went down to the wire. It was fun to make it out there to cover a game.
Are you one of those people who you go to California so you have to go get In-N-Out Burger?
Yeah, I literally, my friend brought it to the airport. I was stuffing it in my face within 5 minutes of being on the ground.
All right. I've never had it. I've only been to California once. What's the competitor? Whataburger? I had one in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I don't remember it. So it couldn't have been bad, but apparently it wasn't that good. But it's recommended if I go to California, In-N-Out, I have to.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. More importantly, if you follow Megan on Twitter, you check out her Unplugged podcast with her hoop stats. She's a resident bracketologist with her whiteboard. Did the whiteboard make the trip?
The whiteboard did not make the trip, so it is not in LA with me. It is sitting home in Connecticut.
Oh, it's missing you, especially after last night, because we had a top 16 reveal that had a lot of movement from, what, 2-3 weeks ago. Top three remain the same, which I don't think surprised anybody, South Carolina, Indiana, and Stanford. But with UConn picking up a couple of losses, other teams in that 2 and 3 area picking up a couple of losses, the number 4 overall seed, your last number 1 seed, is the Utah Utes. And you seemed a little surprised by it, Megan.
Yeah, I was surprised to see them there right now. I thought it was a team. I think there's kind of like 5 teams that are in the mix, maybe 6 if you look at how the committee treated Virginia Tech in this reveal, but in the mix to end up in that spot. But I didn't expect to see Utah there yet. I thought they would need to beat Stanford this weekend in order to get there. I think it shows a lot of respect for the Pac-12 and for, I mean, Utah's only has 3 losses on the season. It's a solid record, but they just lost to Arizona last weekend. And the thing that stands out most for me is they just don't have any top 20 net wins. And to get a 1 seed without that, to me, is a little bit shocking.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. If, you know, they play Stanford tomorrow, they'll probably, if, you know, if you go chalk in the Pac-12 tournament, though, that's not guaranteed. Utah right now is 24-3 overall. If they split with Stanford, whether that means losing tomorrow and winning in the Pac-12 tournament or vice versa, that'd be 27-4 with a win over Stanford somewhere in there. That's probably good enough. But if you make it 26-5, 0-3 against the Cardinal, I don't know if that stands up to Selection Sunday. Now, mind you, this also would depend on what do some of these teams on the two line do as well.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of what's going to play into it is how does everyone else play for the rest of the stretch too. But agreed, I think it's very hard for them to stay there without picking up a win over Stanford at some point in the next few weeks.
LSU stayed put at 5, so Utah technically leapfrogged the Tigers because the Utes were the 6th overall seed a couple of weeks ago. Now they're the 4th, so they leapfrog LSU. Maryland jumps up from the number 1-3 seed. They are now a 2 seed. UConn tumbles down from 4th overall to 7th, and then Virginia Tech is your big gainer. They moved up 5 spots from the initial reveal. They are the number 8 overall seed. Were you surprised by any of those teams on the two line?
I was a little bit surprised by how far UConn dropped. I think we've talked already about their strength of schedule and the number of quality wins that they have. And yeah, that St. John's loss was bad, but I think you're looking at a group of teams in the mix for that last one in the two line that most of these teams, other than Maryland and Virginia Tech, which are the big movers, that have lost games in the last 2 weeks since the last reveal. To me, the UConn one feels a little bit more of not just a reaction to that loss, because they also had the 2 top 20 net wins over Creighton and Villanova in the last 2 weeks, but maybe more of a reaction to just the way the Huskies look right now. And they're not really passing the eye test. I don't think that's shocking for anyone to hear. They've had a lot of close games, and I think they might have fallen a little further because of that.
No, I remember in the first bracket reveal, Charlie Cream and Andrea Carter of ESPN, they had a discussion. Charlie Cream said, I think at that point they had 8 quad one wins. And he said, well, 4 of those came with AZ FUD. And then Andrea Carter said, yeah, but 4 also came without AZ FUD. I think the committee might starting to be leaning towards Charlie Cream, where, you know, a lot of these good wins came without someone who it doesn't look like she's coming back. We just had an announcement. We're recording this noon Eastern time. Gino said in his media availability, what, half an hour, 45 minutes ago, it's a different injury, but she's still not practicing. And at this point, time's ticking. So UConn is the number 7 overall seed. They'd be a 2 seed. Your 3 line, Iowa drops down from a 2 to a 3. Notre Dame stays put. Duke drops from a 2 seed to a 3 seed. And then Ohio State, by way of a win over Michigan. I'm surprised the Buckeyes jumped up 4 spots with, you know, a nice win at Michigan, but that's all they've done this year, this calendar year.
Yeah, this one was a head scratcher to me. I think it's probably the biggest surprise of all of this to me is that they honestly even stayed in, let alone moved up 4 spots in this reveal. Yes, they got the win over Michigan, but prior to that, they got blown out by Indiana, 24-point loss to Indiana. It's a good win over Michigan, but I'm very surprised that the way that Ohio State's looked since January that they were able to move up, especially considering like they still don't have JC Sheldon back, like that injury is still in play. So it's a surprising jump from them.
Yeah, I agree with you. And then the 4 seeds, Texas drops from a 3 to a 4. Villanova, they're still a 4 seed. They technically moved up 1 slot overall purposes. Arizona is the 1 new team into the top 16 reveal. And then Michigan plunges. They took the biggest drop of anybody. They were a 3 seed. They are now the 16th overall team in the top 16. UNC is the team that fell out. Any surprises from the 4 line? Now, mind you, this does not take into account any of last night's results. So Arizona did lose to Oregon. Hey, the Ducks finally won a game. Good job. But keep that in mind that the Wildcats loss last night does not factor into this.
Yeah, I think that's a tough loss for Arizona there. Good for Oregon to kind of get back on the right track a little bit, but Arizona probably still in, but maybe drops a spot there. So they're probably that 16th overall spot, I would guess, after last night.
So that's it for your reveals until, of course, Selection Sunday. Conference tournaments next week. I'm always interested in how much the committee, which it seems they're a little different depending on the conference, it seems, how much they factor in conference tournaments. You know, if LSU makes it to the championship game and loses to South Carolina, Do they get rewarded? Do they get punished, depending on how that game goes, if they beat? Because no one game typically shifts things so dramatically, it seems, until conference tournament week comes around. So that's always interesting. But let's look back at some of these midweek games. There was a lot that happened since we last talked. I guess we'll start quickly on Sunday. Do you have any takeaways from the Gamecocks nearly dropping their first game but escaping in overtime to Ole Miss?
I think my biggest takeaway from that game was that Ole Miss's defense is really, really good. And not surprising, they're eighth in her Hoopstats defensive rating. So definitely up there, but they looked really good against the Gamecocks. And I don't really think I felt any type of way about South Carolina's performance in that game, but more just that Ole Miss, another one of those 8-9 seeds that people are not going to want to see in their region.
Yeah, Rebels lost the rebounding battle by 13, but they really limited. They actually won the second chance points. They held South Carolina to 7 second chance points. There's a blueprint for beating South Carolina because the Gamecocks aren't an otherworldly offensive team. It's just really, really, really hard to follow that blueprint because you just need the size and the physicality and the ability to do it for 40 minutes. Don't let them kill you on the second or third chance. We saw, again, they fell behind last night to Tennessee early on, and then they go on that run late in the second quarter, and by the second half, they just wear you down and wear you down. So there's a blueprint there. Following it is an entirely different animal.
Yeah, I think we've seen a few teams now come close. UConn did a decent job, UCLA back earlier in the season, Ole Miss. But I think the Gamecocks, was the amount of depth and size that they have, it just tends to win out, and they've been tested, but I think they have a much larger margin for error than any team in the country.
Stanford's had a couple of close games in the last week against USC, UCLA yesterday against Colorado. Marissa's going to join us in a few, so we'll skip that talk for now. Tuesday, Maryland, boy, I got revenge on Iowa after the Hawkeyes put up 96 in Carver Hawkeye a couple weeks ago. Terps come right back around and do it right back to them, and that game, I mean, the Iowa game, I'm not going to say Maryland was really ever in it. I didn't think they were ever going to win, but boy, this was a different type of route.
Yeah, I was very impressed with Maryland in that game from two standpoints. First, their offense. I mean, obviously scoring 96 points, we all know how I feel about Iowa's defense, but they got a lot of production from their bench, and I think that was really key to see. It wasn't, Diamond Miller going off for 30 points. They got, I think it was over 40 points out of their bench, showing off a little bit more depth, which is going to make them better in March. The thing that really stood out to me was their defense on Caitlin Clark and Monica Sinano. They were really able to take those two out of their rhythm and kind of force them into bad shots, force other people to beat them. And as you saw, the rest of the team couldn't beat them.
Yeah, I mean, Maryland went loco from three-point range. Two SEC transfers, Brené Alexander and Lavender Briggs, they combined for 43 points. I lied. Math. Yep. Those two can combine. They don't need to score 40 points a game, but if they can combine for 20 points a game off the bench, that takes a little pressure off Diamond Miller. And I thought it was impressive when Miller was on the bench in the second quarter with a couple of fouls, there was no drop off. So that's the difference, I think, between Maryland being a second weekend team. And if they can get that kind of bench production consistently, you might be not going to say a dark horse Final Four team, but we haven't really talked about Maryland a whole lot as being in that elite group. And they could be.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see just in general, maybe a little bit less separation from 3 to 10, like that group. I think Maryland's in that group, and it almost feels weird to call them a dark horse Final Four candidate right now because they're on the two line. It wouldn't be that shocking, but I think they're a team that it wouldn't be shocking to see them in Dallas.
I don't think, as long as you're not the number 8 overall team or the number 9 overall team, and as long as you don't have to face South Carolina in Greenville in the Elite 8, I'm with you. Is there that big of a difference between UConn being the number 4 team and the number 17? Maybe, but it's not nearly as large of a gap as it once was. So we'll hit pause on this conversation because our guest has entered the chat. Marissa Ingemi of the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow her on Twitter at Marissa_Ingemi, I-N-G-E-M-I. She covers Stanford. She covers the Pac-12. AP Top 25 voter, covers women's sports. So a little of everything. Marissa, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hi, good. Thank you for having me.
Of course, thanks for coming on. We were just talking about the Top 16 reveal from last night. Do you have any takeaways from the Top 16?
It's interesting because I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little harsh, but I just feel like all year LSU's been a little bit high in rankings generally. And I don't know. I just feel like UConn's kind of done some more things where I would have put them ahead of them there. But other than that, like, I don't have that many complaints.
Music to Megan's ears.
Yes. I guess I am our resident LSU hater. But yeah.
Is this, though, looking at the Pac-12, is this as deep as you've seen the Pac-12 in a while? We'll take Stanford as an example. The loss at Washington, they split with USC in a couple of close games. They survived that Monday scare against UCLA, had the double overtime game last night against Colorado, head to Utah tomorrow. This is a conference that's going to get eight, maybe nine teams into the tournament. Is this as deep as you've ever seen the Pac-12?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of the narrative at the start of the year was like, oh, is Stanford just going to run away with this? Like a lot of people were saying or talking about that. And obviously that has not been the case. You look at what Utah has done this year. You look how tough Colorado is. USC has been like kind of impressive to me every time I've seen them play. And then you have a team like Cal wouldn't beat them and they look better this year. Like, yeah, I think a lot of people kind of figured UCLA might make a run. Maybe Arizona's there. I think Oregon's been a little disappointing that people were talking about them. But yeah, you look at the depth throughout and just what a tough conference it really is. It's challenged Stanford. I don't think that's a bad thing for them because I think they've had to really kind of look at some of their issues a little more head on going into tournament time than they probably wanted to, but that might not be a bad thing either. But yeah, the depth is just unbelievable every night. It really feels like anyone can beat anyone.
Speaking of that Utah game coming up tomorrow, Stanford won that first meeting by 12. Brink had 25 and Jones had 25 in that first game. Where do you see Stanford having the advantage in that matchup?
Yeah, I think just because Stanford has those two in Jones and Brink, like that really is their difference in a lot of these games. Because, I mean, again, one of the narratives going into the season was how much depth Stanford had and like their bench and how much they how many players they could really rely on. And then it's really been the Brink and Jones show has really won them their games, especially against these tough teams. And it's really felt like in a lot of these Pac-12 games, especially except for the Colorado game yesterday, because she fouled out, they really needed a Brink just to kind of go off in the fourth quarter a little bit. You look at both UCLA games, the Utah game that you mentioned, they've really relied so heavily on her, and then Jones has just been so steady. Like it feels like every game you look at a box score and you're like, oh, just another double-double for her. Those two really make that matchup so difficult for every team because they can shut down someone like Hannah Jump. There have been games where she's had like 3 or 4 points and they've still just been able to produce offensively because of those two. So I think going into any game, like that's really the advantage that Stanford kind of always has.
You mentioned Brink and Jones. Brink had the off night last night. She fouled up. She was so good on Monday against UCLA. It's that time of year, of course, we're talking National Player of the Year, All-Americans. It seems a lot of the discourses, Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, Angel Reese, you know, Mackenzie Holmes having a breakout year. Do you feel like we kind of take Brink and Jones kind of for granted a little bit?
Yeah, it's funny because so I'm from the East Coast and now I just keep telling people, oh, East Coast bias is a real thing because people are talking about Cameron Brink enough at a national level. But then at the same time, like everyone knows, like you go into every Stanford game and you just know what she can do. But yeah, it's really hard to argue against someone like Caitlin Clark. It's really hard to argue against Aaliyah Boston. I think Angel Reese is just such an incredible player night in and night out. So that conversation is it's really tough, but I do think Brink should be in that conversation for sure. You look what she does like defensively as well as offensively. You look at how she just takes over games. Like any given night, she's the best player on the court. Like when Stanford played South Carolina, if Brink didn't have the foul trouble she had in that game, maybe it's a different game. And yeah, it's really tough because I don't think Brink's like underrated by any stretch of the imagination, but at the same time, I do think that maybe she should be talked about a little more in that conversation right now.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Going more to the depth of this team, you know, we haven't seen too much of Lauren Betts until the last few weeks. She's really stepped into a bigger role and now kind of a legitimate bench option for this team. And also, I mean, brings someone a lot of size off the bench as well. Can that bring this team to kind of another level as we're looking forward to the next month or two?
Yeah, early on in the season, the top question I kept getting is, where is Lauren Betts? And for a while, I think they were a little worried about exposing her. She was the number one recruit in the nation going to Stanford. But at the same time, there were some developmental areas from her. And you've really seen just her athleticism improve. You've seen her presence on the court. She's not hesitant. She's getting big rebounds. She's really just using her size and an authority on the court a lot more than early on in the season. It's so important for her to be able to have some of those minutes early in the game, especially if Brink has an early foul and they want to make sure she doesn't get into trouble. You can just put her in there. I think the fact that some of these games have gotten a little more physical is to her advantage. She plays well against teams that also have some size. I look at some games early on in the year against some smaller teams, even like Santa Clara, where she really kind of struggled just trying to move around some of the smaller, faster players. And I think as it gets a little more competitive and intense, I think that she's really a great option off the bench to really match that physicality.
And you mentioned the depth of Stanford going into the season. The three-point shooting in particular, I thought it was really good in November. It's pretty cold for the most part in Pac-12 play. Realistically, you mentioned Hannah Jump, Talana Topolo, or whether it's someone else. What kind of production do they need from Jump, Topolo, and some of these other guards to ultimately achieve their goals, Final Four, National Championship?
Yeah, I feel like early on in the year, they were really reliant on Jump to produce a lot of the offense, especially from three. And now teams really are like face guarding her a lot of the time. There was this one great play in overtime last night where she got under the hoop and she was just wide open for the layup. And I was like, maybe they should just do that more, because when she's hanging out on the 3-point line, it's just, I mean, the minute she plays, she can be a decoy sometimes, and that's valuable in and of itself. But yet, a 3-point shooting's been kind of cold. Sometimes teams will let up on the polo and they forget she can shoot threes. Like, you look back at a Creighton game where she has had three in a row all of a sudden back in December, and she's had a couple of games like that recently too, where she's shooting from three and it's like teams kind of forget. Early on, I think they had Brink shooting from three a little bit more than she has been, just because it's a little hit or miss for her from there. But I don't think this is a team that's going to just score 100 points a game like they were in a non-conference play. I think it's a team that really kind of thrives on those intense physical moments. They're a great post team. You look at a game against USC where they outscored them in the paint like 36-2 or 36-4 or something like that. That's how they're going to win games. I mean, having someone like Jump is just an incredible weapon from three, but if teams are going to shut her down, that's just not how they're going to win games.
A lot of kind of close calls last night being one of them for this team, but they still only have the three losses, so they've managed to close out a lot of those games. What do you kind of feel about how this team looks going into March right now?
They know how to win. They know how to close out games, which is something like I've watched Cal all year, and they've also had a lot of tight games, and they've just, other than the USC win, not been able to do what Stanford does. And that's just because Stanford's a team that has more experience, more talent. They're going to be able to close down those games. So even when they're in those tough, tight, intense overtime type of games, they don't waver. I think the one thing that concerns me a little bit is the offense and the shooting. It's gone cold, especially on the road. At USC, the Washington game was concerning. Last night, a close call, but they're able to pull it out. Like I said, I don't think they're a team that's going to just become an offensive juggernaut all of a sudden. That's not the way they're wired. That's not the way they want to win games at this point. But there have been times like the stretch where at the beginning of January where they end up beating Arizona, but they almost lose at Cal. They go to UCLA. They have a bit of a tough shooting night, and then they lose at USC. Those type of stretches are a little bit concerning. I think overall they're one of the more experienced teams in the nation, and that helps them a lot. They have two of the best players in Jones and Brink. They do have some of that depth, even though I think maybe they haven't utilized the bench as much as they probably thought they would have going into the year. So I don't think there's like a ton of concerns, but if there is one, it's that that shooting can go a little bit cold sometimes. And if that timing is wrong, that can be a big problem in March.
Marissa, last question, we'll let you go. Obviously, you cover the Bay Area schools, but you're also a top 25 voter, so you have your pulse on everything going on nationally. Do you have Final Four and a national champion prediction?
God, you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
I've been an Indiana believer all year, so I'll say Final Four will be South Carolina, Stanford, Indiana, and UConn, just because UConn impresses me, and I'm not going to bet against them at this point. As far as Final Four, I've said South Carolina, Stanford are on a for championship. They've been on a collision course all year. I don't know who will win. I don't want to make that prediction right now, just because I see Stanford too often to pick against them, I feel like, at this point. But at the same time, South Carolina is downright scary. But I think it'll be those two teams.
South Carolina Twitter is scary as well. So wise of you to not not go against them.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
You can follow Marissa at Marissa_NGemmy of the San Francisco Chronicle. Marissa, what do you have coming down the pike? But plug your stuff.
Oh, yeah, I'll be in Las Vegas all week next week for a Pac-12 tournament and WCC tournament. So that'll become my life for a little bit. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Good stuff from Marissa and Jemmy. And she referenced UConn at the very end. We don't, as we continue our look of what happened during the week, we've talked about UConn. We could have the same UConn discussion we've had each of the last 3 weeks, so we'll keep it short. But any takeaways from the loss to St. John's on Tuesday? My opinion on UConn hasn't changed at all in the last week.
Yeah, for me, I think it has a little bit. The Marquette loss, like, it didn't really concern me. I think this one was a little more concerning. And I think that the thing that came out of it from postgame was Gino wasn't happy with the effort in that game and the misplays on defense, the rebounding, things like that. And I don't think those are the things that we've seen this UConn team struggle with. They've struggled with the offense, not necessarily some of those effort type things, which have allowed them to close out a lot of these close games. So I think that part's a little concerning, but I don't think it changes my opinion a ton at this point.
The best they've looked since January was probably the South Carolina game, even the Villanova game. Like, they just haven't looked like UConn. I said last week, I don't think they can get to a Final Four. They got the wrong matchup. That Sweet 16 streak might end if nothing changes. Now, that 2-week break or 10-day break, however long it is, might prove to show us a new UConn team in the tournament. But we'll make picks for the conference tournaments next week. Spoiler, I'm not picking the Huskies to win 3 games in 3 days.
Yeah, I think that's going to be hard for them. I think the reset after that will help, but I think the 3 games in 3 days is going to be difficult, and Villanova's really good, and it's hard to beat a good team 3 times in a season, too.
Sure. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, don't have to touch briefly, but some of these bubble teams, Nebraska hammered Illinois. So they are 15-13, assuming they don't lose to last place Northwestern, and they're locked in the 8-9 game, I think. So if they beat Michigan State and then lose to Indiana, they'd be 17-14. I think, sadly, 14 losses shouldn't get you in. I think it might get them in. Same thing with Oregon, who picked up a top 20 net win, top 25 net win last night against Arizona. Let me check. Top 25 net win. The Ducks are still, they've plummeted. They were a top, 25 net team last week? Oh, I lied. They're still 21st. So they're in the same boat as Nebraska. They're 15-13. Don't stub your toe against winless Arizona State tomorrow. They'll be 16-13 heading to Vegas. Win a game, you're going to have two teams at 17-14. They probably both make it.
Yeah, I think you have to win a Pac-12 game. I think that's going to be really important. You got to win a game in the tournament for Oregon. But yeah, I think they're right on the bubble. I don't like that they're going to get in with their 14 losses, but
they're a top 25 net team. I don't see committee leaving them out. So that was last night. Other games last night, we've talked a lot about Stanford. We can talk a little bit about Lauren Betts if you want. We talked to her a little bit with Marissa, but the number one recruit in the nation, she's 6'7", load of expectations. Before the last couple of weeks, she had 4 double-digit scoring games. CSUN, Cal Poly, Grambling, and winless in the Pac-12, Arizona State. Not a murderer's row of dominance there. Now, Cameron Brink had fouled out last night, but they went to her late twice in overtime against Colorado. Well, now she's scored in double figures in 5 of 6. This is an added element, I think, that, frankly, only Camilla Cardoso and South Carolina can match if this were to continue.
Yeah, I think it's been a really solid development for Stanford in terms of getting something from that bench. Like Marissa said, they haven't gone to their bench as much as maybe people thought they would this season, and I think they're starting to go there a little bit more. I think the thing that could be tricky come March is that she's a freshman, and I think sometimes we see freshmen that are great in March, but they tend to be a little bit more inconsistent, where South Carolina has the advantage that Cardoso has some of that experience under her belt already. But if they can keep getting this from Betts, I think it kind of takes the Stanford team to the next level. If they're going to make a Final Four, they might need it.
I want to make clear, I'm not comparing the two. This is like a super, super, super light version. But if you rewind a decade where Brianna Stewart wasn't great in the regular season, and then sometime in late February, she figured it out. Not to say Lauren Betts is going to be a Final Four most outstanding player, but just that little extra bit to put you over the top. Again, not trying to say Lauren Betts is going to be Brianna Stewart, but if you can get like a C-plus version of that to a team that's already Final Four and national title good, that could be the difference. Because the difference between South Carolina and Stanford, apparently, mind you, this was 3 months ago, isn't that much. We saw it on the court.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Time to talk about the ACC. There's more excitement. This is a very exciting conference. I don't think anyone, none of these teams are phenomenal. Wildly entertaining to watch. Second straight week, we've had a buzzer beater. Elizabeth Kitley, the hero last night, as Virginia Tech beat UNC in what was a crazy finish. But North Carolina took the lead with 12 seconds left. Deja Kelly, both teams had free throw opportunities, missed some, and then Elizabeth Kitley took the inbound with 2 seconds left and beat the buzzer. This Hokies team, see the reward that they're now a 2 seed if the season were to have ended today. What do you make of UNC, though? They've struggled recently, and I can't quite put my finger on what it is. There's no like overwhelming statistic that goes, oh, that's why they've suddenly struggled.
Yeah, they were dealing with some injuries, so I think that's been part of the recent struggles. But I don't know. The UNC team's just been inconsistent all season long. I think we're just kind of seeing one of the downstretches of that. But even early in the season, sometimes it was inconsistency within a single game. You would see them go down big in the first half and then play this fantastic second half and come out with the win. But I think this team has just struggled to be consistent all season long. They've struggled and then picked up a big win over Notre Dame. Now another down stretch. So if they can be on the side of their talent, the upside where they're, you know, playing at the level that we can see them play on a high level, they could be really good in March. But if it's more what we've seen recently, that they might be an early exit.
Lost 4 of 6. The losses: Louisville, Syracuse, NC State, and Virginia Tech. So 3 NCAA tournament teams, maybe 4 if Syracuse gets in as well. That is one of the headliners of what's a really, really entertaining weekend of the final regular season. The schedule makers did a nice job. The ACC is the only conference that, I lied, there's two conferences that really will be decided tomorrow. Duke and Notre Dame are tied for first in the ACC. Duke faces North Carolina. Notre Dame is at Louisville. Blue Devils would own the tiebreaker, so if the Blue Devils win, they'd be in. Blue Devils went wire-to-wire last night against NC State. I thought the best they've looked in a while for the Blue Devils.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good win for them. They had that, I forget who they lost to last week, but they lost pretty badly last week, but a nice rebound, and they're looking good going into March.
Duke scored 70 points last night for the first time since December 28th. Do you know the opponent the last time they scored 70 before last night?
And I guess it is someone that is not a Power 5 opponent.
No, it was NC State.
Ah, okay.
Doesn't speak highly of the Wolfpack defense against Duke. But no, I thought in general Duke, they played a lot faster, which I think is why they were able to put up the points that have eluded them for a large stretch of the season. And they've gone through a pretty, I'm not going to say brutal, but a daunting schedule in the last couple of weeks. They're 4-1 in that stretch. They beat Notre Dame. They beat BC, which fine. But Miami's pretty good. They lost at Virginia Tech. Sure, they got kind of blown out, but it's not a terrible loss. They won at Virginia. They won against NC State. Close at North Carolina. So pretty brutal last couple of weeks for the Blue Devils. So the ACC will come down to the wire. The other game that will be decided, a true de facto regular season championship game. It comes in the Big 12. The winner of the Texas-Oklahoma game on Sunday will be the number one seed in the Big 12 tournament. What do you got in that matchup?
I think I'm going with Texas. They were on this hot streak, and then they lost that game to Iowa State, which isn't great because I don't think Iowa State has looked good lately. So not a great loss for Texas. But I still think this is a team that's kind of found their footing a little bit at the right time. They're still not, you know, what they were predicted to be in the preseason, but Rory Harmon's really good. The defense has gotten to that level that you expect from a Vic Schaefer coach team, and I think Texas looks pretty good to win the Big 12.
Longhorns only losses since November and Rory Harmon's return were at Oklahoma State. Nice win, by the way, for the Cowgirls over Iowa State, at Texas yes. Tech, and at Iowa State. The good news is you don't have to play road games in March, so I still like this Longhorn team, win or lose tomorrow. If anyone's going to make a run out of the Big 12, I think it's them. Sooners, they're a fun team. If you put Iowa jerseys on them, there's not a whole lot of difference. They average 87 points a game. They give up 75. Technically, they're worse than Iowa defensively. It's awfully fun to watch. It's not a recipe to make deep March runs or win 3 games in 3 days in the Big 12 tournament, but opportunity to be the one seed there. Other weekend games, we have a couple of top 15 matchups, tonight. In the Big Ten, we have Maryland and Ohio State. The Buckeyes finally beat someone of note with Monday's win over Michigan. Terps, meanwhile, peaking at the right time. We've talked about both teams already. Well, are you gonna? You're not one to overreact to individual games. What are you looking for tonight?
I'm curious to see what Maryland does. Can they kind of continue what we saw against Iowa and have another really good game, you know, show some of that depth and that defense consistently. I also think Maryland's a team that's chasing that 4th-1 seed, and this is kind of a must win for them if they're going to have a shot at ending in that spot. From Ohio State, I'm not sold on them being back because they beat that Michigan team. So I guess if they can somehow beat Maryland, I would feel a little bit better about what they're looking like. But to me, this is not like a 3-seed level team right now. And maybe they can change that opinion against Maryland, but I don't really expect them to.
No, I agree. We talked a lot about Stanford, but Utah hosts the Cardinal tomorrow. Alyssa Peely, she missed last Sunday's game against Arizona State, a game the Utes almost lost. That would have been a bad loss. She missed it with an injury. She did play last night. She played 23 minutes, scored 24, 25, 26 points, something like that. So she looks fine. Played the whole game. They really struggled without her. So if she's not 100%, I'm not sure if Utah has the power to keep up with the Cardinals.
Yeah, I agree. Without her at 100%, I think that's going to be a hard game for Utah, especially because they rely so much on her scoring to be effective. Their defense, to me, is not great. I don't think it's not as bad as Iowa, but it's the thing. My biggest question with this Utah team is, can they actually defend well enough to make a deep run in March? And I don't know that the answer to that question is yes right now. So I think without a really high level of production from her, it's going to be hard for them to pull off an upset over Stanford.
And then in the Big Ten, Indiana has already clinched the one seed after Iowa's loss to Maryland. The two play each other tomorrow, the Hoosiers and Hawkeyes. Game day's there. It's going to be a great atmosphere at Carver-Hawkeye. I will have zero takeaways from this game. If the Hawkeyes win by 10 or 12 points, great. That's a real tough place to play. It's going to be sold out. I won't be worried about the Hoosiers because I just mentioned it. You don't play in hostile environments in the NCAA tournament, so it's fine. And if Iowa goes out and wins, I still don't think they're a Final Four team. So it's going to be a great atmosphere. I'm not going to take anything away from it.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. That's how I feel about that one as well.
Great. We have great analysis on this. We're not going to take anything away from like half the games tomorrow. Megan, where are you going next week? Are you going to be back on the East Coast? Are you going to Uncasville?
Yes, I am. I will be at the Big East tournament in the Battles of Mohegan Sun all weekend.
That's a Friday through Monday tournament, right?
Yeah, I won't be there Friday, so I'm just doing Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
I don't know how I feel about Monday. I guess it's the TV window, but...
Yeah.
I'll be in Greenville next week for the SEC tournament. If you listen to the baseball pod in this fine CSN feed, Kyle Schassberger joining us, Mike Coulter as well. You can listen on the Varsity Network app, SiriusXM, so it's always a fun time for... We won't make predictions until next week, but as you can imagine... South Carolina will be the team to beat in Greenville. End of the regular season is here, folks. Come tomorrow. Megan, safe travels back from the West Coast. Hopefully you find something to do in the rain, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good.
Follow Megan at Megan Gower. Great weekend ahead. Enjoy the final regular season games. We'll talk to you next week for a championship weekend.